extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Wow. From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, Caitlin Carr. It is Monday, May 16th. Week 11 is in the books. We're not quite a third of the way there, but basically a third of the way through the 2022 MLS season. And before we get any further, I just want to shout out my friends in Austin. We have such a wonderful tit-for-tat relationship. I got this Keep Doubting Us shirt in the mail. It fits like a sail. It's going to be a sleep shirt. Mindy's going to make me throw it away in like a year or so. But I thank you so much for sending that to me. I'm with you. We're on the same side. Don't let anybody tell you your success. Don't let them take it for granted. Don't let them say that it's too early to say that you're an elite team in this league. We're together, unlike David Goss, who is your curse. So I just know you. I appreciate you. And also, I have an extra shirt if you'd like a signed version of this shirt. I don't know if anybody would, but if you do, that would make my week. So I got two. I got two of them. I have two of them.
Wait,
can't wear two.
Signed? Is it signed by?
I haven't signed. I haven't signed. No, I haven't signed it yet. I would sign it personally.
Oh,
me, Andrew Wiebe.
I thought you meant like the team sent you one. It was signed by the entire team. I would.
That would be even better. I can only dream of such riches, Caitlin. Maybe one day my dreams will be realized in that sense. Yeah. But anyway,
what are you gonna do if they turn around and they go to LAFC and they win this weekend?
Take credit for it. How do you think this works? How do you think this works, man? That's how it works. Yeah. All right, how we feeling? Ooh. Happy Monday. Sorry about that. Dave's got to get a drink of water here before he just absolutely tears me to shreds.
I don't really understand. I think that you should no longer be allowed to say my name on this show. I think that's where we're at right now. You speak for yourself, and you keep my name out of your mouth.
Whoa. Will Smith, back up, man. Back up. Stay off stage. All right, let's get into it. Coming up today on the extra time from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. Of course, the best thing we saw in Week 11, we're going to hit the 2222 players of the weekend presented by Body Armor. That's basically like the entirety of NYCFC's U22 signings. Another big weekend for them. We'll run through the big matchup out in the East, Philadelphia, Red Bulls. A fun Sunday. Seattle knocking off Minnesota. Big questions about the Loons. Dive into those. Atlanta, New England. Entertaining game there. What's going to happen without Buxa? Are Atlanta on the right track with their DPs? What track are Sporting Kansas City on other than the one into the basement right now? 7-2 loss for them against Portland. A lot of big questions about what comes next. And then some quick hits around the league, including FC Dallas. The juggernaut that is the hoops these days, and then into the mailbag as well. Let's give some credit here where credit is due, and that is to Fordina's Shallowy Body of Walter. That's the name of the Extra Time Fantasy
That's a
League
great
winner.
Name. That is a fantastic
I didn't deliver it as,
name.
I didn't deliver it as well as I wanted to deliver it because there was just, I mean, phonetically it was difficult, but yeah, props to that. So Anders wrote in. Anders is the one that said this. I'm not saying this. It's through the mouth of producer Anders, quote unquote. So at least Sporting Kansas City got one win this week, and I'll remind Anders, who decided that the Open Cup doesn't exist anymore because the Sounders are out, that also Sporting Kansas City won in the Open Cup. So it's technically two wins. All right, best thing you saw in Week 11. Doyle, let's start with you. What do you got?
The post games. We saw coaches and players just ripping their teams after, you know, bad to embarrassing performances. I mean, we'll start with Sporting Kansas City. Johnny Russell said he's embarrassed, said it wasn't a professional performance. They lost 7-2. He annihilated his team. And he put his hand up as well, but he annihilated his team in a way that we see like maybe once every couple of years. Gary Smith, after another pretty disappointing Nashville performance, said a bunch of guys were nowhere near the task at hand. He all but subtweeted Akai Loba, right? It was pretty hilarious to see him do that. Adrian Heath called out his team for Sunday's loss to see, they always lose in Seattle, but for Sunday's loss in Seattle, he called out their quote, stupid errors. That's his words, not mine. This was incredible stuff. Like normally MLS post-game press conferences are you know, pretty even keeled. You say a lot to say very little. We had at least, I might have missed some. Well, I didn't, you know, I didn't see what Phil Neville
I was going to say, but like Phil Neville midweek after a win saying we don't deserve to move on and the guys who want to play more are terrible. So
there you go. Yeah. Like this is, I mean, this league is usually pretty milquetoast in the managerial quote department, but we had four all-timers just in the past 96 hours. So I like that quite a bit.
There was a very robust That's Wax segment last night between Charlie and I on MLS After Dark. We just had a lot to choose from. I believe I read the entirety of Johnny Russell's quote out loud, which we might yet do again because it is that incredible, and it basically paints the picture, in his words, what's going on with Sporting Kansas City. Dave, what do you got? I mean, sorry. He who shall not be named in a purple shirt, what do you got?
Respect my agency. Thank you, Andrew Reavy. Mine's going to pull a little out of MLS, but I don't know. It's not very often that a friend starts a professional soccer team or a semi-pro team that's fun to watch. So two of my good friends, Matt Wolf, who many of you well, no, he created the LAFC logo. He redid the Chicago Fire logo, Racing Louisville, Oakland Roots, all of those. He and one of my oldest teammates who I played with on the Port Washington Vipers before we were on the A team back in the
big
day.
Big Vipers guy.
Good Vipers energy. Post-Phoenix, of course. They started a soccer team in Burlington, Vermont called Vermont Green FC. Their kits launched on Friday. They played their first game and won 4-0 on Sunday. They're building the team around you know, climate sustainability as well as climate justice for people. So I recommend if you like good swag, you like good gear, search Vermont Green FC. Go buy a jersey, go buy a t-shirt, hat, all the things. Everything's made sustainably. Everything's done the right way. And if you're in the Northeast area, go out to a game. But it was pretty cool to be like, my friend talked about this. And then it's like, no, now they actually have players and a coach and a team and all that stuff going on.
Which of the three kits would be your
so I'm a cream collar guy. I love collars, so I go collar immediately, and then the cream collar kind of fits for me. So I've already ordered with my fiance away kits, but some of the t-shirts are dope, the hats are really good as well. So I don't know that tie dyes and autumn leave looks fit well on me. It's a lot of attention to the upper body, which is maybe unnecessary.
The cream is complementary to your skin tone.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's a good silhouette. Yeah. It's a good silhouette. Okay, yeah. I appreciate that. Kaylin, what's your best thing from week 11?
I mean, so far, honestly, just these two gentlemen's choices so far. I love that. Very on brand. Like, Doyle just picking, like, MLS managers lighting up their own team. Just like, what's the best thing you had? And he's like, the chaos and all of the coaches just like lighting people up, and then Goss going full just
hipster, baby.
Yeah, off league, like not even which is great. I need to get a Vermont Green I need the tote bag so I can go to like the Fort Green
Orc is Orc is really support
very on brand.
Kaylin, did you ever get lit up like that by a manager? Like I mean, I'm not going to say called out by name, but did you ever get lit up like that publicly where it's like you knew it was about you?
A guy with the headband is just in. He's not in it. He wasn't in this game.
No, I don't think so. I really don't. But I only missed the playoffs once. So anyways.
Ooh. Wow. Maybe Sporting Kansas City should drag Kaylin out of retirement. Maybe that'll fix their season.
Get a little talisman in there. All right, give it to us. What's the best thing
you saw? I'm actually going to stick with my brand and go. Last week, I did the same thing with the number nines, domestic number nines getting goals in MLS. And I just think it's, for me, it's one of the most interesting stories. It's fun to watch every week, and it's continuing to develop. I think Doyle put out a tweet looking at it where it was saying, I think he said, you can't remember the last time that there's been four of the top 10 in the league at this point in the season, that are domestic strikers. And I can't think of that either. You know, it's very rare to see, generally, I think maybe one, maybe two, but especially not leading things. And Jesus Ferreira, two more goals this week. I think, what is that? Now he's up to nine for the season so far. Jeremy getting two more as well. Now he's at seven. So we're able to see what he can do with, you know, chances as far as just being in the lineup. And then San Jose, giving them, I thought they looked good, very good in the attack, still major problems in the back. then you go
which
back
is their
town,
brand. So everyone remains on brand.
Georgie continuing his brand, trying to make a run for the MVP. I know Goss is very pleased about that. I'm surprised you didn't take that as your best thing of the week.
Don't worry. We'll get on back. MLS today, we started the entire show in French in honor of our overlords from Montreal. Mainly nice. Susanna, because I know zero words in French. I had to Google love for my tweet, which is amour, which is like the most obvious thing in the world.
Yeah, it's like every language. That's just a good guess. And then Brandon Vasquez didn't score over the weekend, but he was very influential, pressing and created, I think, had a big hand in creating the two goals that led towards Cincinnati's fourth win in a row. But for me, it's like I keep harping on it, but the clubs that these guys are at, those are the right clubs for domestic American strikers to go. And all of and I didn't mention Jassy. And that's a big one because he got his first goal for Colorado. And if he wasn't already an easy guy to root for after Caleb Porter kind of lit him up on his way out, I think he's become even more of a figure that you want to pull for. He hit the post on the second one. So it's good to see him get his first goal and kind of like stake a little bit more of a claim towards a comeback season for whatever motivation he chooses to take on. But he's not going to put
his out publicly, but you might guess where he's at privately. I don't know if this is on brand for me. You can tell me, but I just love Tati cherry picking. You know, he's playing on the small field and he's like, you know what? I got like 16, 24, whatever it is, fewer yards to run. I'm just going to hang out right around midfield and I'm going to see if the crew forget about me. And lo and behold, the crew completely forgot about arguably the best goal scorer in the entire dang league. And Maxi Morales doesn't forget. Maxi Morales is out here throwing, you know, outlet passes, and he's just like, oh, yeah, easy bucket, bam. Tati on the break, beautiful finish from Tati. New York City FC, absolutely rampant. They're going to be rising up the standings in the Eastern Conference, but right now it's a three-way tie at the top. Montreal, Orlando, and Philadelphia in the East. Out West, LAFC, Dallas, and Austin rounding out your top three. That brings us to the best from your column this week, Doyle. You led with NYCFC.
Yeah.
Tell us why.
Because they're doing it different, right? Like we're a year into the U22 initiative, and now granted, not all the young players on NYCFC's roster are technically U22s. Like Talis Magno he's technically a young DP, and I think Santi Rodriguez might be signed with TAM. But like the philosophy behind that initiative is there, and it's on the field for NYCFC, and like everybody wants to do what they're doing, like in terms of developing these guys into like winning players. And we've seen it like even the generation before the U22 initiative, because like Tata Castellanos was not Tata Castellanos, you know, when he came to MLS. Keaton Parks, he was kind of a cast off from Benfica, like a talented kid, but a cast off. He needed development. James Sands certainly needed development. Like they have been really, really good at this, and it's allowed them to come out of that CCL run, which ultimately I think was a little bit disappointing, but given how many different stadiums they had to play at and 70,000 miles, like, you completely understand why they wore out. But coming off of that CCL run, they're playing the best ball in the league. They are just absolutely pumping folks. They've taken 13 of the last 15 points. Most of those games haven't even been close, including this one. It was only 2-0, but it could have been much worse than that. And they still have Maxi Morales, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit because he was in a new role. But like they are kind of the ideal, I think, in terms of what the league had in mind with this U22 initiative. Because if you can develop young players like Tati, who they got for $2 million, into $12 or $15 million, you're going to be able to constantly just replenish that trough of talent that you have. And it's been fun to watch. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
What's replicable about it? What's not replicable? Because when I think about not replicable, I go into the algorithm, as Garth Lagerwey called it, the City Football Group's just scouting infrastructure. That is probably not replicable for most MLS teams. I mean, they can aspire toward that, but you just have sort of a resource gap there and an expertise gap and just a physical presence gap throughout the world that City Football Group has. What isn't and what is replicable?
Yeah, it's still too early to say. And I tend towards Garth's analysis of that with CFG just has so many more resources scattered throughout the world, so that if you're spending $9 million on Talis Magno in your CFG is probably a good spend. If you're spending $15 on Ezekiel Barco and you're Atlanta, that's probably a bad spend. Like, you probably don't have the ability to be as certain with where you're going. I don't know if that's replicable. I'm not sure if Ronnie Dialek gets enough credit for how good he is at putting these guys into spots to succeed. And like, part of that comes from having a structure of veterans who are already successful and have that core. And it's very similar to what Seattle have done over the past 13 years now, where they always have that core. Sometimes it's four, sometimes it's, you know, as many as eight guys who are like veteran, proven MLS guys. And that makes it easier for, I think, the next generation to be really good, because you're not trying, like, you're not like Toronto FC, where you have eight kids out there trying to carry a team. You have two or three who are plugged into spots where they can succeed. I don't know if it's replicable at the level that Ronnie Dial has done it. It feels like it should be, because we're seeing kind of the same thing in Philly. Like, they don't miss on any of their signings either, and they don't have the same sorts of resources either in terms of global scouting infrastructure or in terms of just money to go out and spend $9 million on a Talis Magno. But it's all... Look, like, NYCFC are one of the two best, I think, top-to-bottom teams in MLS right now, and it's because they are getting it right with these South American signings in a way that I don't think anybody else has matched.
I think I should step in here. So I think we should all have to say the word replicable multiple times in this show just to see if we can.
How did I do, man? Because I felt like I was tripping. I was worried for a second.
Definitely there's some syllables in there.
You can't copy that.
Yeah. Replicable.
So the one thing I would say is, I agree with everything Doyle said, and I actually don't know that it has to be. I think part of what MLS needs to grow into and is different teams built in different ways. And then there is a knock-on effect as well. And I think when you look at NYCFC and you look at these young players from South America, you're now looking at an opening for Red Bulls to get more academy kids from the area and say, look, you could play for our first team because you're going to be stuck behind guys if you're there, which isn't a bad thing for anyone. And I think it helps Philly and New England and all those teams like that. And then you look at FC Cincinnati starting Harrison Rebeldo, who is an NYCFC homegrown, who wasn't going to play there. And so they traded his rights to FC Cincinnati. And I think you'll see what NYCFC is doing, making the league better. And it doesn't always have to be, well, here's the model, now everyone else can follow it. It could be in other ways. And, you know, I'm pretty sure we'll see some of these players maybe leave MLS and then come back to other teams, right? Which is something we see with Lucho Acosta now in FC Cincinnati. There's a lot of ways that what NYCFC is doing can positively affect MLS. And it's not only just, well, it worked for them, so now how do you copy them?
Maxi is a number six. That's interesting. Yeah, Ronnie Dialek had a really good quote on this after the game as well, Doyle.
Yeah, he did. He said basically he's the smartest guy on the field. We could put him anywhere except goalkeeper, and he'll figure things out. The question with Maxi at the six is, can he handle it defensively? And that's basically a Ronnie Dialek quote. But, like, Columbus didn't force him to have to do that. And this goes back to the U22 thing, right? This team, since Maxi arrived in 2016, 17, 16, I think, they have been dog meat when he hasn't been on the field. But he'd missed basically a month of soccer, and they were able to more than survive. They were able to thrive, really. And that's because they had guys like Santi Rodriguez to put into that number 10 role. That's because they could drop Keaton Parks back and get, you know, real minutes from him as a defensive midfielder or sort of a game controlling number eight. And that developmental path makes it easier to survive injuries to key players, but also just transition into new eras. That said, when Max is healthy, you get him back on the field, and the most obvious place to put him, I guess, in this game was as a Regista. So there he is. He's the NYCFC Pirlo. He wasn't great. He was, I think, pretty good. And then he, as you pointed out, Weeby, he had the ball over the top to Tati for the second goal that just iced the game. Because it's like, Dyla's right. He's the smartest player on the field. And even though he's playing a new role, he's smart enough to know, like, if there's not immediate pressure to me and you know, the opposing teams up the field, just look up, pick your head up. There's going to be space in behind, and obviously has the skill to play that ball and put the golden boot winner in on goal, kind of like his chances.
And know his partner. Just know that Tati's the sort of guy that's going to be like, oh, you're pushing forward on this free kick you took too quickly and you lost track of me. I'm literally going to sit at the midfield line and make sure I'm onside, because I know that Maxi Morales, or to go to these other guys, Santi or Andrade to a lesser degree, or Tyus Magna, who's shown really good vision, is going to know that this is, I'm looking for it. I'm sniffing, man. This is where I want to be. Play me in. I'm going to finish it. We have a question here from Brahma Ghosh.
Also,
who says,
wait, that's
how big
not,
a hole
that's
can...
not cherry picking, I just want to say. That's just playing position.
I like the idea of it cherry picking, because, you know, we're watching NBA playoffs, Doyle pressuring me into it as he gives me updates on the group chat. So it felt like a basketball play in a way. You know what I mean? Felt like a little, you know, on that small field, etc. What would you call it? If it's not cherry picking, what is it? It's just being smart?
Yeah, I think it's just playing center striker.
Just standing at center mid and waiting for the ball. It's not your fault. I mean, the other team isn't.
It sounds cooler when there's a label on it. Like, cherry picking sounds cooler. Brahma Ghosh says
negligent on Columbus's part. And I've been in those positions where you're sitting there and you're like, oh man, like if this turns, and it almost never happens, because eventually somebody turns their shoulder and is like, oh, that guy's still standing there. I mean, for both of the center backs to be pushed like that is, I was shocked.
So on the negligence here, Brahma Ghosh asks, how big a hole can the Crew dig and still have hope for a run that grabs the seventh spot in the last week of the season, as appears to be the plan this time around? Right now, the Crew in the Eastern Conference are 10th. They're only 2 points out of seventh, 13 points. It's pretty packed up in the East from like last place all the way to, you could even argue, seventh. So what is the plan right now, does it seem like, in Columbus? Just wait for the summer to get that additional attacking piece to complement things? What's going on with the Crew?
I'm less concerned about them in the back, actually, despite that play that we just mentioned. I mean, I think they have good goalkeeping. I think they generally have good center backs. I think where they're really struggling more is in chance creation and being able to get goals. And I think Miguel Berry hasn't been able to find his opportunities, and then they really haven't been able to create enough from the wings. There were a couple plays where Derek Etienne was able to kind of get in behind the back line or be able to, you know, square some balls across, but then they've just kind of lacked that finishing touch. Celarayan, I feel like always a threat from deep or from dead ball situations, but hasn't really had kind of those partners to play off. So I think it's just... and I actually don't even know if that's always a part of his game, even like the way we see other number 10s traditionally kind of like bounce balls off guys or combine and look and go. I think he's much more of an individualist in some ways, that he can kind of like create an opportunity and finish it himself. But so it's just kind of lacking some dynamic pieces. And I think, like you said, the hope has to be that they can get more solid defensively and then try and wait it out to see if they can add a piece. Cause I do think they're missing that. They brought in Diaz. They've brought in some pieces off the bench, but nobody's really been able to kind of become even like a game changer for them. After Hurtado came in late and got the goal. What was it last week? But, against Toronto,
against England.
Yeah. Against the Rebs. Yeah. All I remembered was Omar, and I was like, oh, he was in Toronto now. But here's
the numbers to sort of illustrate this. Zero shots on target, 0.6 expected goals. No chances of really any consequence created in this game for the Crew. So, yeah, maybe waiting it out. Lead story for us is going to be, would you like to lead us in French?
Allez!
there you go. Allez, allez, allez. I still can't help myself. CF Montreal. 2-0 winners in Charlotte, where Charlotte had been very, very good so far this season. I believe 4 wins out of 5 games. Georgie gets a goal. Alistair Johnson gets a goal. They are top of the East after losing their first 3 games on 20 points. Since they lost those first 3 games, 6 wins, 2 draws. They are rolling, Dave. They are looking like a special team. We got people hitting us up from Montreal saying Georgie for MVP ? Nancé for coach of the year ? Your thoughts on this? They want to know what Olivier Renard should do in the summer. Do they hold on to Georgie? Do they lose out on millions in the process? Perhaps go for silverware? They are pretty encouraged in Montreal, and I don't blame them for being so. What do you think?
Yeah, they,
what do you think of this run?
They had a build that they believed in, and they were able to put it together, and this is sort of the peak of this team. And when you look at it, they've done it with different pieces in the lineup. They've started different guys in central midfield, different guys at wing back. I still don't believe their true center forward has been on the field, and yet they've been able to get the performances out of that position to get the best out of Georgie. Kamal Miller's been flexible. Rudy Camacho has stepped in and out. Alistair Johnson has played center back and wing back, gets the goal in this game. So they're showing flexibility. They're showing a clear tactical identity. They're showing a ton of belief. We talked about this on MLS today, but this 8-game unbeaten run started the week after they lost in CCL, when they went up 3-0 in Atlanta, went up a man, and then lost 2 points, right? And that should have been the devastating moment that was like, yeah, Montreal's not good enough. They don't have enough pieces, blah, blah, blah. From that moment on, they've just gotten better and better. And that's really when Kai Kamara started to find the field as well.
Wait, I'm going to stop you. You said they have a clear tactical identity. Explain to me their tactical
identity. Well, they have, I think... they defend in the most dangerous areas as well as anyone in MLS. So they know exactly where they're going to let you hurt them, and they know exactly where to stop it. And then I think with their wingbacks, they're able to pull you wide enough to just allow space for Georgie to find the game. And so it's not always clear patterns, but it is, how do we find our best player in our best spot? And that's what you saw in this game, right? Kyoto leaving the middle of the field so that Georgie could find space when the other team had a diamond set up specifically to sit on top of it and have three players around him at all times, and they were able to create a different opening. So I just think their understanding of the channels of where they want to play and how they can affect another team is really impressive, and I think it shifts from home to away. I think at home, they're more aggressive. They're pushing higher up the field. Away, it's more hit and counter, which they're really good at because they have players that can play in those places, in those spaces. But yeah, so, and I think we've talked about Wanyama and Kone and that connection and what they've added to this team and brought to this team. And Torres, listen, I think the issue with Joaquin Torres is he's not consistent enough at what he does well. But if Georgie's playing this level and Kyoto's healthy and Kone's out there, then it's enough to get you over the line. I don't know that they're going to win the Eastern Conference in the regular season, but they're going to be around a home game the entire year.
Let me turn that question.
Would you be surprised if they won the Eastern Conference?
If they do it without a second from Mason Toy, yeah. I'd be surprised if they had enough goal scoring in that team without that.
Is player. Mason Toy, when you say they're waiting, they haven't had their center, is Mason Toy that center forward for you?
I mean, I don't think it's Bjorn Johnson, right? They like Sanusi Ibrahim. I don't know. They're better at scouting players than I am, right? They've already brought in players across the team that other people weren't looking at that have been really good performers for them. So it's fair to give them the benefit of the doubt on that. But yeah, that's what I'm saying. And listen, if he can't go this year, then as a fan, you'd hope, I'm not a fan, I'm saying what their fans would say, you'd hope that they spend a little bit of money to say, you're already this close, can you get us over the hump? On the Georgie going away thing, it'd be shocking to me if...
You mean Georgie being sold?
Yeah, it'd be shocking to me if every one of these guys, Jesus Ferreira, Georgie, Matt Turner's already there, if the deal is not, I arrive in January. It's wild to me to think that a player playing well week in and week out with 3 months to go to a World Cup would want to go to a new country, a new team, entering a new season and find their feet and think that that's going to break them into the national team. But you don't control the world. And if it is your one shot to make that move for your career, then I guess you have no choice.
There's also the thing with Georgie where it's like, maybe he goes to the Nations League. Like, I hope he's on the Nations League team. And Berhalter says, you played great. You need to jump up a level if you want to push to the national team. So it's like a different situation than like a Walker Zimmerman, where it's like his name's already there in pen, even if he stays in MLS. But where Georgie, if Bologna wants him and they're like, yeah, we have a spot for you in the starting lineup of a Serie A team, then it's like, that might be the push you need to get into a World Cup squad.
I hope he stays for the remainder of this season.
Same.
I really hope he stays.
The Brendan Aaronson, Tyler Adams thing is, I think, would be the best approach for it.
Tejan just won a title in Belgium.
Right.
you know, right. and having some big moments for Bruges as well. I want to flip this real quick, Doyle, because I thought it was a great question on the tactical side. And Mehdi Hanneman hit us up on Twitter and says, how is Montreal's style of play, quote, so different from the rest of the league? That's what Miguel Angel Ramirez said after this game. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, I'm not sure it is all that different from the rest of the league, but I'm taking a look through who Orlando have played so far. Charlotte have played so far, and to be fair, like, they haven't played anyone who really uses wingbacks and who sort of puts two guys out there with chalk on their boots and tries to open you up underneath to hit those third line passes, like that ball from Kamal Miller to Torres on the Georgie goal. Like, that's not a pass you see a ton in MLS. MLS teams are more about being compact, especially in the Eastern Conference for whatever reason. They're more about being compact and kind of attritional in terms of win the ball, go forward, you know, quickly get numbers up, flood the box, whereas Montreal are a little bit more patient, I think, in terms of building from the back and using the positioning of those wingbacks to do as David said and open up space underneath for either Georgie or Torres, who I didn't like last year, by the way, but who's been very good this year, to come underneath and start combining and just that one pass immediately makes your whole midfield scramble. And it forces your center backs into really tough on the fly decisions that Charlotte's didn't get right. And so it's kind of I see what he means about it being a different sort of challenge from other teams in MLS.
Michele Giannone is one of our favorites on this show. We don't have to say that. He's just great energy, great dude. He's been doing his MVP updates every single week. Right now he has Georgie number one, he has Carlos Gil two, Lucho three, Jesus Ferreira four, and then Driussi's dropped down to five. Kaylin, walk me through a Georgie MVP campaign. Could this happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it could happen. I mean, if you look at if they finish in the top, if Montreal finish in the top three, even in the East, I would say, and he gets 15 goals and 12 assists or somewhere around there, 15 and 15. I feel like he would have a great shout to do that, just because I think I think the MVP discussion often comes down to, what would you do if you take this player out of this team? And where would this team be at? And I think that there is a very easy answer to say, if you take him out of this Montreal team, I think they're back down closer to where they have been in the past, which is fighting to get in the playoffs. Like, we're hovering right around that playoff line at points and then below at points and scrambling to get in. So I think that's a really good and really easy way of that's a way where I think Joao Paulo wasn't able to kind of make that progress last year, because he only got that credit in a sense because the Sounders were still going to be in good shape even without him. Whereas if you drop that one singular player like Georgie, I think is in Montreal, I think it's a very, very different picture for that team.
For example, the Chicago Fire, the last place team in the East, they don't have Georgie.
Oh.
So. Do the.
By the way, is anybody willing to go guarantee that Montreal's a playoff team this year?
Yes.
I would guarantee it.
I think I picked them fifth preseason.
So did I.
So I feel
four or five.
I still feel pretty good about that. And I think to what Kalen's talking about with MVP, I think it's the same conversation around non-saying coach of the year. If they're in this top four in the East all year, and maybe even more if Georgie leaves, he'll be a finalist, and he should be.
Let's talk about the team that had what appeared to be the top spot in the East sort of locked up, but have hit a dry spell despite not losing a ton of games. That's the Philadelphia Union. They host the Red Bulls. We know what the Red Bulls do on the road. Well, for I think, what is this, maybe even the first time this year the Red Bulls didn't win away. It was the first time in six games. 1-1 draw. Philly had a lot of opportunities to put the game away. We have Max Halprin hitting us up on Twitter, says, for the Union, he calls him Jim. I've never heard that before in my life. But does Jim Curtin, it's no space there. Just
Kaylin, is that what you call him in the locker room?
I have not heard that one yet.
Yeah, that's a new one. That's a new one for me, Max. For the Union, does Jim Curtin have to fix something, or is this the ebb and flow of a season?
So I'll start by saying I think it's the ebb and flow of a season. I could understand if your thought is Philly should win the supporter shield, that they've given up huge points over the last five games and they've sort of basically erased the advantage they had against NYCFC coming into the year, which is how I'm looking at it in the East, which was you have CCL, you're traveling, you have all these games. Can we build an advantage that you have to chase us from? Now they are 3 points ahead and NYC has a game in hand. So they've lost all that. But starting from an even point, I would still say Philly has a chance to win Supporters Shield because I think this team's good enough. And I would say coming into this year, the hope was that Gazdag brought you a different level offensively than anyone that in your team has had over the last 5 years. And Michael Ura was that attacking piece up top that could finish things off. He showed up late. His visa was late. Now he's hurt. It's not like he's a guy who has injury history where that's the worry coming into it. He's a 26-year-old, probably a different age because I always get them wrong, but he's somewhere around there. And so I think for this Philly team, they're still elite at both of the fullback positions. They've got probably the best defensive core in Major League Soccer, however many of the numbers you want to put in there. They've got depth with the young players that Jim Curtin hasn't leaned on, and maybe that's your one complaint is just rotation and having players fresh more often, although he tried in Open Cup. But I would say that this is a Philly team that I don't worry about because when you look at the results, it's Montreal, who we just talked about. It's at LAFC. It's at Nashville in the opening of their brand new stadium. And it's home to Red Bulls, who are the best team in MLS history on the road. So that's my point. I leave you all the floor.
I'm going to take the floor and keep it moving because we have so much to cover from this week. Let's hit Sunday here. And Kayla, I'm going to throw this to you. I want to know what you think about Thiago Almada so far. 2-2 draw for Atlanta and New England. It was a comeback for Atlanta. They were down 2-1. Adam Buxa had two goals. Buxa is absolutely on fire. And we'll get to maybe what the Revs do this summer, likely without him for the rest of the season, because that's probably going to happen. What do you think of Thiago Almada?
I mean, the quality is there. You see the, like, just on the finish there, his ability to kind of, like, find that space and find that little margin. And the bigger question I had was less about his quality and maybe more how it fit within the team and just how this Atlanta team was going to kind of work together. But when you see now how these pieces are starting to gel and some of the goals that they're scoring, especially the goals that are coming from that combination play in tandem, you're seeing that that piece is like, it's looking really good for Atlanta United moving forward. That now defensively, there are still some issues as far as getting stretched or isolated. And, you know, part of that's just come from, I think, so much of the injuries and just how important, you know, Miles Robinson is just one of the best defenders in this league. But as far as like the quality goes, those guys are magic right there with the combination with Moreno and Araujo and the little like that. It wasn't just that goal from Almada. It was that his little like outside of the foot kind of like lifted through ball there that Araujo puts in. It was like, I mean, that's nice, right? So the quality is there. I agree with Doyle. I mean, Doyle is saying he's still really high on this Atlanta United team. And I agree. I think they have a lot of they have a lot left considering if you were to take out, for me, if you were to take out the top four most important players coming up through like the center of any team and see what happens to an MLS team, I would say you'd be at the very, very bottom of the table most for almost any team in MLS. But the way Atlanta are constructed, yeah, you see now this team still has a lot left in the tank. And in some ways, I feel like these guys are only just starting to gel on me. I think Jill in the post-game show was in the interview, I think, you know, the manager said, I think there's still more from these three.
Yeah, I'm gonna jump on top of that and say it's not just attacking quality, it's attacking chemistry. And you know, Kalen said it, Gonzalo Pineda said it, and it's there, and it's obvious when you see especially Almada and Araujo playing together. That Araujo goal is a great example of it, but we saw it a week ago as well against the Fire. Those two guys, even though they're similar type players, and even though I think at first glance the fit was a little bit questionable, like I'm I'm over that already with those two guys in particular. They're clearly already making each other better. And that's going to allow, well, two things. First of all, like, as talented as Barco was, he never had chemistry with anybody. Just he was that type of player, and Almada has already surpassed that. So I think that there were some justifiable concerns in the Atlanta fan base ahead of the season that he was just going to be Barco 2.0. He's already better than that. So that's one. And two, you know, going back to the Union discussion, they don't have the talent out there. I mean, maybe when Ura comes back, it'll change, but they don't have the talent out there to brute force wins, to just go out there and win because they're more talented than the team they're facing. Atlanta, even without Guzan and Robinson, Joseph and Ozzie, they still have that. Like, they're going to be able to score two or three goals against most teams just because they have so much skill to put on the field, and that skill is actually finally amplifying each other in the attacking third. So it's like he and Almada, I think, is the biggest reason for that. Tom Bogert and I did our 22 under 22 sort of preview a few weeks ago, and we didn't have Almada in that top tier with guys like, you know, Mbaki Fall and Gaga Slonina and Jesus Ferreira. We had him like a half tier below that. I think if we were going to do it over again right now, I would argue for Almada being a top tier, that type of guy, because he's looked it for the past 3 or 4 weeks now.
Is Santiago Sosa injured? This is a random aside.
He's been dealing with injuries. But he's also been a liability when he's been on the field this year. He just doesn't cover ground.
Yeah, I'm just like thinking about how you replace Ozzie. I'm like, well
they
is,
love we go back to the, they being Gonzalo Pineda loves Rosetto. So that's one spot. And now you've got Franco Ibarra and Emerson Heinemann back and all those other pieces. So I don't think he's a given even when healthy on the field.
I mean, I get that. We just go at the 22 U22 signing side of things. I'm like, huh. Well, what happened there? Question for you, Dave. Adam Buksa's on fire. It seems like Adam Buksa will likely be sold in the summer. At least that's what Adam Buksa would like as he tries to make a World Cup team. We've seen a lot of transition issues, like transition issues for the Revs here. And that's what happens when you have a wildly successful team. Your players become in demand, and the Matt Turners of the world and the Tejans of the world leave, and all of a sudden you have to change and adapt, and sometimes it's not that smooth. What happens if Buksa leaves in the summer? Should that be like a pressing concern for Bruce in New England, or just like a nice problem to have?
Isn't that what they signed Josie for?
Yeah, but yesterday they got a point in Atlanta just because Adam Buksa and Carlos Hill were on the field. There wasn't really much else to explain that and got them there. He's got, what, 6 goals in 6 straight games. I think they're in trouble when he leaves. And that's sort of a decision they're going to have to make as a club of what are we trying to do? Because this might be his peak value, but also that probably closes your window at being an MLS Cup favorite or whatever you want to call yourself. Now, they could do it. It's the playoffs. Things can happen. If Gustavo Bo comes back and plays the way he did last year, they're probably okay. And as Doyle said,
much of that was playing off Buksa.
Well, that's why they signed Josie, right? Josie's a guy who, at this stage of his career, I think, sees the game well enough to create the same openings for Gustavo Bo, because that's what he did for Jovinko. Like, that's what he does at his best, is he occupies center back. He picks up the space because he knows where he should be. He's easy to play off of. He's an intelligent passer. Like, he should fit in there pretty well. He doesn't have, I don't think he'll press and open up the field as much as Buksa does, because Buksa's 23 or 24, because, again, I don't know.
It's 25.
Is he really?
Oh, no, ages are the stick in our bicycle spoke. Brutal. On this show. We just cannot get those right. I feel a little bit, but it's like there was a lot of should in that Josie conversation. Yeah. And when I talked to Josie before this season began, I was really encouraged. I thought that, you know, Josie's got a new life. He's feeling that new life, but man, we haven't seen it yet. And I think that's got to be a really big concern.
So the only reason I'll disagree is because he hasn't played soccer in a year and a half. And like, you're always gonna have to ramp him up. And the point was to be ready when Buksa leaves, not to be ready now. For the same reason, there's a 22-year-old Serbian goalkeeper sitting on the bench.
I thought the point was to have him ready for CCL.
No,
that was the point of signing Josie.
Well, they only played two CCL games, so they didn't have a ton of time. to get him.
We just talked about like taking out four players. If you take out Tajon, you take out Matt Turner in the summer, and you take out Buxa from the team, tell me how New England's going to be in the back half of the year.
Not
great. You might see Carlos Hill doing a lot of gesturing, a lot of pointing, and heavy discussions with the sideline. Let's turn to Seattle, Minnesota. Again, this Sunday was a blast, man. It was really fun to watch these games. 3-1 Seattle with a win over Minnesota. They were down 1-0 at halftime. Brian Schmetzer said afterwards, hey, it took us a while, but the quality came out. And he's right about that. The quality comes in the form often of Christian Roldan, who gets a goal, draws a PK, and has an assist, which is a very Christian Roldan game. The dude just is just a gamer. He's just a really incredible player to watch, and I'm sure even more so to play with. We can talk more about that, but we want to talk more about Minnesota here. The stats are not good for them. I want to say that's 5 losses in 7 games, something like that. And here's Adrian Heath after the game. Quote, and I underlined these parts, so I might skip around. Quote, we have to stop making the mistakes or we're going to have to start changing the personnel up. He's changed up the personnel a good bit this season. He's not been stagnant in that sense. Let's see. He liked the shape. He thought they were well prepared. It wasn't that they didn't play well. Everything about the group, quote, today was spot on. Maybe not the final balls and the opportunities. Wanted more in the first half, more goals, that is, and I thought they had opportunities to get them. But here's another quote on the defensive side of things and why I thought they lost the game. Quote, we can't keep doing what we're doing. If teams are going to beat us, let them beat us through their good play, not by us giving them opportunities by stupid mistakes. That's what we're doing at the moment. Drew Gallo hit us up and says, what's it going to take to get Minnesota on track? This team has too much talent to be losing games at this
rate.
Wait,
do they?
Joel.
Do they?
That's a question for you.
They have 2 DP center forwards on the bench in this game. Robin Lud is the starting center. Robin Lud is a nice player. He's your starting center forward. Is he top half of the league center forward? Fragapane has been nothing on the wing this year. Babello is amazing, but he's not playing at the same level he did last year. Kervin Arriaga, nice player. I don't think he's like, best 11. I don't think he's an all-star caliber guy. Will Trapp is not an all-star caliber guy anymore. I don't know if any of the defenders are all-star caliber. If it wasn't for Dane St. Clair, who has been the best goalkeeper in the league by a mile, maybe the most important all-around player in the league this year. He's been that good. Like, you should be on Michele's list of MVP candidates. This team would be hurt real, real bad.
Oh, we got siren, too. That's bad news for Minnesota. Anytime a siren pops up, bad news.
Always.
So I don't think there's anything wrong with the way they play. I actually, I wrote about this a bunch in the column. Like, Adrian Heath has he's not going to change his formation ever. He loves a 4-2-3-1. That's fine. But they were, like, a pure counterattacking team 2 years ago. Last year, they were a pressing team, but they would very distinctly press in the middle third, try to get into those instant transitions. They did that. They played really well. They created a lot of chances. They didn't finish them, but if you look at the underlying numbers and go back and watch some of those games from Minnesota last year, they were playing ball. They were playing really good soccer. They just couldn't finish. This year, okay, the team can't finish. Let's press higher. Let's create more chances. Let's get our guys into positions to just walk the ball in the net sometimes. And that, like, I think it's the right call to try to do that by Adrian Heath, but it's not working with the talent he has. It's not. Their wingers do not create chances. They do not find high-level chances. Lud creates a lot of havoc with his movement, both defensively and in attack, because he's always pulling out to the wings. He opens up space for guys to attack at the center backs, but none of those wingers take that space and turn it into goals or assists. Babello's an amazing classic chance creator, but he's not the type of 10 who's going to burst into the box and score 15 goals. So it doesn't line up with the talent at hand. So I think the premise of that question is actually flawed, because the premise is, with this talent, they shouldn't be a team like this. I actually think with this talent, it's about right, because it's mismatched. The young guys don't improve. And other than Babello, there's nobody on that roster who makes the in attack. There's nobody on that roster in attack who makes the guys around them better. And that's a real problem. And that's a massive difference from what they had 2 years. Do you remember 2020 playoffs, that team? It wasn't just Babello.
How could we forget? Hot boy, baby.
Kevin Molina, Ethan Finley, on the other side. Like, Ethan Finlay, he's not an all-star this year, but he's always going to stretch the field. He's always going to put the back line under pressure. He could cross the hell out of the ball. He's fast as hell, so you got to respect him. Like, you can rely upon that, and just having that out there makes the team around him better. Minnesota has nobody like that in 2022. It's like, I don't think Adrian Heath, the manager, is the problem here. I think Adrian Heath, the GM, has done a really questionable job.
So the only moment that pops in my head, and this is like one very small moment out of everything, was the goal against the Rapids to open things up in Open Cup was Hunu dropping deep and playing a through ball in the space he vacated for Abu Dunlady. And you mention it. Robin Ludd, Frogapon, they're all goal scorers off the wing. And it seems like you went and found a center forward who can be a creator out of that center forward position. And then you signed a second DP center forward like 3 months later and buried him on the bench. And that's the only piece to me that makes more sense. Also, because Ludd's just better on the wing than he is up top, just because he gets in more comfortable spots and he is a very good player. That's the only thing. But you also have lost Mentonaire for the year, or he has not played yet this year. They obviously lost Chase Gasper as well. So you've lost some of the width that comes from those players.
Traded Chase. That was a choice. That was a
choice. Was unavailable to them for 6 to 8 weeks.
That's fair. That part is fair. You're right.
He was not with the team. So they've lost two pieces that were really strong pieces to their team that they, rather than shift things, have just been like, well, O'Neill Fisher can do the same thing. It's like, well, there's a reason that guy doesn't start in MLS week in and week out. So I think a lot of that's been pretty frustrating to watch.
Other thing I'll just add was there weren't any stupid mistakes from Minnesota. Like
whiffed on the cross for the goal they scored. How are you complaining about the stupid mistakes?
First one is just good job from Christian to like charge into the box. And I think, Will Trapp wasn't able to kind of recover in time. The second one is just an absolute banger from Christian, just turning so well and just smacking.
I have no idea how he put that much power on that ball.
That was insane. And then the last one's in transition where it's, you know, really well worked from Seattle. They were just super smart where they were holding and didn't actually try and go for the third goal until it actually became clear and appeared. And then they took their chance really well where Ladero comes in. But I honestly just thought, to go towards Doyle's point of, which I thought was spot on about the roster construction and the, really just there was a talent gap between Seattle where you're just able to see with Rusnak and all these different players on Seattle. It's just they just had a much stronger team.
I do want to say one of the I missed it in my favorite moment of the best thing I saw in week 11. One of the best things I saw undoubtedly was pregame. Rain is pouring in Seattle. They've got the CONCACAF Champions League trophy out there. And Adrian Heath just does a little walk up just to see it, just to check out the trophy, just to see what it looks like. That, for whatever reason, that was a moment that I enjoyed. By the way, Jeremiah Oshan putting out a bunch of numbers basically on what the Sounders look like when they have 7 or 8 of their top players, and they look like a 2 points per game team and like a team that's going to rise right up the Western Conference.
They're gonna start stomping a hole in people in the same way that NYCFC in Montreal did as soon as they're CCL run was over. Like, this is going
to
be the normal.
Well, they have to make it through the Ligia too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Still we wondered if Nico Ladero was even going to be on this team. Nico Ladero's got 7 goals and 5 assists. Like this finish,
they didn't start the game very well. And then with Nuhu's error, I think this was one where if you do come out of CCL and you have the Dallas result and then you have a second one that goes poorly, you can find yourself in a little bit of a rut. So I think it, you know, especially from Christian, I thought it was like they really needed somebody to grab the game. And like the way, I don't know, the way he can influence the game in so many different ways, right? And I think that was on full display in this one.
Wonderful. We got to move off the Sounders. Anders is having too much fun.
He's giving us, quote, players drafted over Christian Roldan in 2015.
Dude, remember when Clement Simeon got drafted by TFC and no one had heard of him and no one knew where he lived or who he was? And then he never came. That was a tight pick. Nailed it, TFC.
Okay, let's go to Portland Sporting Kansas City. Touchdown, Timbers, 7-2. Ah, yikes. Sebastian Blanco looked really good. There's a lot, you know, look, there's a lot of Portland players that look good in this game. 2 goals, 2 assists for Blanco. That's nice to see. I'm just going to read this quote from Johnny Russell. And I would cut it and do different things, but I think in its totality, it's like it's important to hear it, and it really explains a lot of what's going on with Kansas City right now. They had a pretty good first half, actually. The 7 goals didn't come in the first half. I think they had only allowed 1. They did pretty good. Here's this quote. I don't have the Scottish brogue. I wish I did. We have Bobby here. We get Bobby to read this in his accent. But, quote, we spoke at halftime that we had done some nice things in the first half and that the next goal was massively important. If we got it, then we really felt that we could have gone on and won the game. Then we let them score in 45 seconds, something like that. Then it's just an absolute capitulation after that. To concede 6 goals in one half of a game is, and I'm trying to choose my words carefully here, it's not even embarrassing. It is so far beyond that. It's just a complete disgrace as a professional, individually and as a team. That second half is so unacceptable on so many levels. Generally, I don't even know what to say, honestly. I've never been as embarrassed in my whole career. I've had some low times in my career, but this is number one. Already this season hasn't been acceptable. Just pathetic, really, in the second half. Not good enough. Actually, and this is really the calling card here, actually, I'm embarrassed to call ourselves professionals. Just reading that, like the thought of writing it sounds hard. Saying it, you know, live in sort of repetition. I mean, there's a lot.
That's my MVP right there, by the way.
He got a goal. So, I think I took him in the Golden Boot draft. So I got a goal out of this. A lot of people hitting us up. Turner Hess, how can you see Kansas City turning things around? And if the season is not salvageable, what would you want to see to give us some hope for 2023? And no, Pulido and Kinda alone don't fix everything. Jeff Tuba says, what does it take for a change to be made at the top? If winless in 7, giving up 6 goals and a half doesn't do it, what does? Something has to give. So there's a lot of questions here about what Kansas City does going forward. You know, I think it's fair to ask about Peter and the team at this point. I know I sort of dismissed that earlier in the season, but we're probably at a point here with this sort of performance that, you know, in a lot of cases you would see coaching changes made, but obviously Peter he's everything on the soccer side for Kansas City. And again, rightfully so, but there's gotta be some self-examination for Kansas City. So I wonder what you guys think about the examination that should happen, whether they can salvage things for 2022, and if they can't, what do they do? Because in the NBA, this would probably be a tanking situation, right? It would be like a go for the top draft pick situation, a play the kids, a move assets, salary cap wrangle sort of
Johnny
situation.
Johnny Russell would be ring chasing, demanding a trade to the union or something
for
like
that. For a 2027 pick swap and a 2031
right.
option.
We're not there yet. With MLS, I don't think we'll ever be there just because of the nature how soccer is. I don't think there's any hope for 2022. I was pretty down on the talent on this team heading into the season, and what hope I had for them came from my confidence in Peter Vermes's ability to figure it out. I think he will figure it out eventually. It's just not going to be for this year. They're not good enough. I think he needs to rebuild the midfield. He's got a lot of guys there who look like backups to me, and that includes Roger Espinosa at this point. Like, age has caught up with him. He's not the guy that he used to be.
And by the way, that's not Roger's fault. It's not Graham's fault. It's not this. It's there needed to be a transition moment for them to become lesser but still important pieces that aren't like the crux of your success.
Right. And that's not happening. That hasn't happened, but now it's going to be forced upon them. So there are no starting caliber defenders on that roster either that I've seen. The silver line, I should say, the other thing is that like Tim Melia has had a great career. He's one of the best stories of the past, 8 years in MLS, coming from Chivas USA pool keeper and all that to a guy who I think should have been semi-regular in the national team picture for about 5 years there. But he has had a nightmare season. He is at an end. Like at his age, you have to wonder if that is just father time won another battle. The hope would be that, okay, turn this roster over, Hopefully Cam Duke can prove to be a starter at one spot or another, whether it's right back or somewhere in midfield. Hopefully Felipe Hernandez can be sort of a Roger Espinoza type, you know, ball winning terrier in central midfield. Hopefully they can, you know, one of the imported younger center backs can be the type of guy who you're like, all right, yeah, this is a guy who's going to start giving us 2,500 minutes a year. That's where the silver lining is. But I think the next two or maybe even three transfer windows are going to be about completely rebuilding this roster. And I give Vermees credit for holding on with the guys who did so many great things for so long with Sporting Kansas City. But this was 1 year too long for that.
I just think, so just to push back slightly on your whole thing, Weeby, Pulido and Kinda would help. Like, they are 23rd, I think, in chances created.
I didn't.
No, you just said, I don't think it fixes everything. They're a playoff team with
that. Was in the tweet, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was in the sorry. Tweet. Mr.
Yes.
Or Mrs. or they, Twitter.
Yeah, Jeff Tuba.
I disagree with.
Yeah, maybe, right? Somebody else. I don't know.
Senor Tuba. Pulido is an elite player in MLS. They spent a bunch of money. There isn't really an MLS team that can afford to miss two DPs and still be competitive. But outside of that, I think to Doyle's point, and Debe and Volodare should just play every minute for the rest of this year. That's sort of what you use this for. Find out what you have
to Zonas
next year. Zonas as well. Cam Duke as well. Felipe Hernandez as well. Ozzy Cisneros. And I've said this a couple times. They obviously hit a grand slam in the draft with Roger and Beisler and Zusi. And that was the core they built. And Peter Vermees and the ownership of this club has invested in the academy. And I think with the belief that the next core of their team would come through that. We have seen nothing at the first team level from the academy. And I don't know if
Gianluca Busio, I push back you on either. Gianluca Busio would be the pushback. But Caden Pierre is one of the guys that actually looks like he could be Jalen Lindsay came through the academy too.
Okay, so you're talking about a player that they recruited at 15 and then sold. You're talking about a player they traded in Jalen Lindsay. And I think that's where we're getting at the issue, which is the transition into the first team, there is clearly issues there. So whether it's the IDP program they've set up, whether it's the lack of the second team challenge for them, whatever it is, that has not worked. And I think that's a step that they need to figure out. Peter Vermees talked about regions on the Football America show during the Open Cup Goldcast, where he's like, we don't have as rich a region. We went out and got Busio, North Carolina. I don't really buy that in the U.S., like all the populations in all these areas are bigger than what it is around the world. You can find a player or two if you are good at what you do. So that's been a frustration, I think, for me in terms of watching them. I will say, just hands down, it's still Peter Vermees. Like, people have bad years. Teams have bad years. Things fall apart. Pulido gets hurt. Kinda gets hurt. That happens. That doesn't mean he's lost his touch with the league. Doesn't mean he's lost his touch with what he can do for Casey. If you want to talk about having more people in that club that can say no to him or maybe push back or have other opinions, that's probably valid. But MLS teams just aren't robust at the first team level anywhere, not just in KC.
And there's a lot of people with, I would push back on that and say there's a lot of people within that organization that have the wherewithal, have the relationships to make it a collaboration. I think it very much is. Brian Bliss is there. Kerry Zavagna and Peter have been together a long time. I don't believe that Kerry can't look at Peter and say, hey, that's not it, man. Like,
but are you talking to three people who have the same philosophies and ideas, and that's why they're in the room?
Yeah, okay. That part of it is fair. By the way, Cam Duke is a homegrown. Felipe Hernandez is also a homegrown. So I see your point. I definitely agree with aspects of it. There have been some success stories, but the transition hasn't been right. And by the way, it wasn't just those three guys in the draft. It was also guys that they used to flip for resources. Like, they did a really good job there in the mid-2000s, whether it be Nemeth or, you know, Kai or Rod, you know, whoever, all these different guys that
they
CJ Sapong.
They killed it in the draft.
Yeah, I know.
It's more, it was like eight guys in the draft.
I know.
Chance Myers. Mm-hmm. It was CJ. It was Dom Dwyer. It was, you know, it might be.
Yeah, Dom's a good one. Yeah. But I'm saying they flipped a lot of those guys on for assets too, and then used that to reinvest and build in the team. And for a long time, they had sort of like Max Tam. They weren't big spenders on the DP side, but it was Max Tam. We have a lot of people asking about Vermees and the job.
Wait.
And what I would say,
well, we mentioned the tanking thing. Do we think someone comes in and tries to get someone off them and that they would make the move? AKA, does Charlotte try and drop the $2 million in allocation from Paul Ariola on Johnny Russell?
I think it'd be crazy not to. At least, I mean, you should pick
for Charlotte, for
pick up the phone.
For a team that's one piece away, for a union, right? Or maybe Montreal, if we're thinking like a team that could be the Galaxy badly needs something from the wingers. Like Johnny Russell would be a really nice fit. But the difference between MLS and the NBA is that in the NBA, and that's how we're framing this, is we're talking about multi-millionaires. With MLS, it's a different ballgame in terms. So you're talking about uprooting people's lives, and you know, there's a different, vastly different cost of living between going to from New York to Kansas City, as somebody here might be able to explain. So there are more personal variables and all that. But like, certainly, if you're Peter Vermes and you have that conversation with Johnny Russell, and it's like, look, the Galaxy are calling. They feel like they're a piece away from the championship. We're going to move in a new direction, try to get some players in. Can we make this work? Does this work for you? Like, it absolutely should be a conversation that is had.
Oh my God. I would definitely never entertain that question if I were supporting Kansas City, just because you've got the one guy that, like, to me is at least showing some fight and some heart on the team, when literally most of the team seem to completely just give up.
That would be the capitulation, right? That you would be saying,
but that's what tanking
you'd be acknowledging.
And Open Cup will be what they
go. What's the benefit of that in MLS? It's not like you're going to get, like, is the number one draft pick that important in MLS? Like, what?
No, but
the...
if you get $2 million worth of GAM, exactly, and you open a DP slot and you clear out $1 million worth of salary cap, like, right, that's 20% more of your entire salary budget with one guy.
Go get a Johnny Russell,
maybe, but he's also 32, right, so they will need to do that at some point. The question is, do you get something for him or not?
Yeah, I made this argument a few years ago with Piatti. Right. How and this was how this was when Columbus, like, badly needed goal scoring winger, somebody who could create something off the wing, and how Montreal badly needed a starting caliber center back. And my suggestion was Lalas Abubakar for Ignacio Piatti, because where Montreal were in their build at that point was it was a build over. Piatti was not going to be part of the long-term answer for them. And where Columbus was like, we need one piece to push us over the top. And Montreal fans screamed bloody murder. Well, Piatti got old, got hurt, faded away. They lost him for nothing. And I understand, like, this is people's lives, so you don't want to... Like, it's tough to talk about players like assets, but sporting directors have to think about players like assets. The best do. It's a blood, you know, you have to be ruthless.
Also, can you change the game on that and say $500,000 for a loan to the Galaxy, yeah, and say to Johnny Russell, listen, we know you live here. We want you here. We are not competitive this year. This will help us buy Kinda down and bring in a DP center back. Someone's got to do something new at some point.
I agree with Kalen that it's a really tough sell to your fan base too.
Yeah, that's a part of it in MLS too, right? Like, you can't just is there a case where we've seen a team just, like, fully throw it out and try and rebuild from that,
yeah,
sense?
Like, I also think it's antithesis to what Peter Vermes represents in a lot of ways too. Like, of just, like, uber competitiveness, of wringing the absolute most out of a team, out of a system, out of a, you know, out of a spend, and that being a point of pride, of identity. So that would be a huge thing. We're really pushing on. By the way, we'll do Portland on the Power Ranking show tomorrow.
Listen,
probably with Chris Radford.
As a Knicks fan, I just want a tanking team in MLS to really just do the thing.
And yeah, this is like a
it
really
makes you feel comfortable. It's a confluence
of a lot of things going on right here. As for the Peter Vermes long-term situation, a couple points on that. There might not be more trust and more sort of reliance between an ownership group and a manager / sporting director in the league than in Kansas City. I mean, Peter Vermes has always been that guy. When Kurt Anolfo got let go and he was the head of the soccer side doing all the signings, the ownership group looked at him and said, we need you, Peter. We need you on the sideline. We think this is going to work. If my memory serves correct, Peter wasn't, like, chomping at the bit. I mean, we all know what happens with managers. in professional soccer. Like, your job is not forever. Well, he did it, and he brought unprecedented success to this team. He brought a decade of glory. He painted the wall a ton, and he built out this huge soccer structure at which he is the very, very top. And, you know, in a lot of ways through his eyes, but he also has some really capable lieutenants. But what I'm saying here is that, like, the soccer side of Sporting Kansas City is Peter Vermees. And so this is not a situation like, let's say, in D.C. where Hernan Losada is doing some things that you're like, well, this ain't going to fly, man. We gotta move on. And it's actually – we can actually do that because we have Chad Ashton, who precedes him, who has political capital with all these players in a different way than Hernan Losada. We have a front office that's been here for a long time and ultimately calls the shots, and nothing's going to change there. So our identity as a pressing team, which we've decided on and Losada just sort of fit into, is going to continue. There'll be continuity. Losada's gone. We can just turn that page. You can't just turn the page. Peter is, you know, he's the czar, as I've said before. Everything trickles down from him, and I just don't see this ending in an ugly way. You know, the results, if it does end, and I don't know that it will, I think it'll come down to what Peter wants to do. Maybe he's tired, man. Maybe he's like, I need a new project. Maybe he's thinking, I haven't had a day off in more than a decade because of all the things that I do. Maybe I just want to do something different, whether that be a different team in MLS, international soccer. Maybe I go to Hungary and coach a first division team. I don't know what Peter would want to do. Maybe he just wants to take a rest, or maybe he wants to say, you know what, this is my new challenge. I'm going to bring this team back. I built them. I'm going to bring it back. It's on me. I hold that responsibility. Point being, with the level of trust between the ownership group, the relationship, the depth there, his connection with the fan base in the city, I think it'll be a situation that doesn't get ugly, where they're making the decision together, and I certainly don't think there's any chance at all of it happening during a season. No way.
I would say
zero.
Be careful
chance.
What you wish for, because if you move on as a club or you make a decision like that, and I'm not saying it's close either, because I really don't think it's close.
I don't think it's close at all.
At all. It could take a long time to recover. Pulido being out, I think, really damages their top end. They made a big splash to really go after that. Kinda being out, they need an elite six. I think that's something that they just haven't had to kind of protect them in a while, even at some of the pieces that they've made. And moving, even Ilya, you see the success elsewhere. And then the back line, I think, more than anything, has really been a trouble spot for a while now that they haven't been able to solve. But if you get those pieces back, and I think this team could make the playoffs next year. I really don't see it being organizationally in a really dark, like, messed up place.
I think they would say probably they need to reexamine some of the things that lowered the floor. And those are some of the signings in the back. That's that midfield that you're talking about. The ceiling obviously got dropped down when they lost two DPs, but the floor to me is a bigger issue. And that goes to what we're talking about with the academy as well. Like, how do you get more from the players that keep you from being in the position you are now, where, as Johnny Russell said, you're embarrassed to call yourselves professional? It's going to be a sort of a soul-searching week for Kansas City. I believe they host Colorado midweek. There are 10 games midweek in MLS, so fire up ESPN+. Let's keep moving. We're going to have to run quick here to get through it here. Anybody have big thoughts on FC Dallas? 3-1 winners against the Galaxy on the road. Jesus Ferreira, 2 goals. Doyle, I think the number you've been throwing around is open play goals allowed by Dallas, by the Galaxy, and Dallas sort of ripped that to shreds.
Yeah, it was zero, or it was one, rather, and they scored 3 in the first 23 minutes. Nico Estevez kind of changed the system for this one. Like, they Dallas has been a little ponderous, I think, even though they've been winning or getting good results in 2 months now. They've been a little ponderous, I think, over the past few weeks. And he changed up the system. I think he brought Paxton Pomykal into the center a little bit more, because one of the big rotations was him flaring out wide to open up the half spaces, and just played a lower line and were constantly sending runners in behind. Just constantly sending, like, inviting the Galaxy upfield and saying, we're fine with having 40%, and we're just going to annihilate you getting into space. And man, that was a right call, because Dallas feasted. Jesus Ferreira is so tough to keep track of. His movement, before the play even really starts to unfold, it feels like he sees it. And his movement is just a nightmare for opposing back lines to keep track of. And same with Paul Arriola. Velasco has not been the bolt of lightning that it looked like he was going to be at the start of his MLS career, but he's still been pretty good. And then everything else just seems to be clicking for Dallas. Like, this was, I think, their best win of the season. And they've had some really good ones. As for the Galaxy, you know, one of the things that I think people were hoping for was that Efra Alvarez would take a step forward this
year. I was hoping.
We heard it in preseason.
Yeah.
You know, we like, and you can see he does look fitter, but he sees the game so slowly. He doesn't just play it slowly, right? Like he actually sees it unfold really slowly. So for a guy with his skill and comfort on the ball, he actually doesn't create a lot of chances because he misses the window for when to play that killer pass or when to combine and take space. So that's one. And then two is, I mean, they're still getting absolutely nothing from the wingers. Like, Douglas Costa had a goal this weekend, but it was a set piece and was already 3-0. He has added absolutely nothing, and he kills attacks because he just wants to dance on the ball. Cabral does everything right except the final ball, whether it's shot or pass, is almost never there, and it all falls on Chicharito. Now, Vanny said in the postgame, like, okay, you know, we understand that we're not going to be able to win every game 1-0, and it's a process to get the guys to where we want them to be. But, like, I have not seen any progress from Efra or Cabral or Costa. And for a team that, in a lot of other ways, looks like they're ready to, if not necessarily compete, then, be pretty good, having your whole three line on a 4-2-3-1 give you nothing, that's not tenable.
Can I just throw in for Dallas two things? One was their big question marks coming into the year for me was the durability of Hedges and what they do without him. And Martin Pais is only on loan till June. They've gotten now wins with Jimmy Mauer in goal, and Farai started this one with Hedges, started in place of him last game, and they've been good in both games as well. That's a really good sign for Dallas sustainability. The other is, get your Ferreira jerseys back out. Santi Ferreira, the youngest of the family, starting 8 games for North Texas SC. I called their game on Saturday night. Starts at the 6 or the 8. So the next Ferreira is ready for the bloodline. So you don't have to stress how long Jesus will be here.
We're building a spine of Ferreiras.
A 6, a 10, and a 9.
The legacy of David continues. It will never end. Not ever. All right, let's high press the rest of the show.
One thing I would just add, Raheem Edwards. Raheem Edwards out in this one. And I think he's been super important to the Galaxy this year. Chase Gasper had trouble on the first, well, actually on 2 of the goals. I think Raheem Edwards coming back hopefully should be a boost, because I think it was a short-term sort of muscle strain injury.
All right, let's high press the rest of this so Doyle can get out of here and we can all enter. Plus, I don't know, do you like hour and a half podcasts, folks that listen to Extra Time? Maybe you do. All right, we'll get us started in the quick hits. RSL 2, Austin 1, comeback win for RSL, a red card for Austin, but also just a awesome looking environment at the Riot. I want to thank the Austin folks for this jersey. I will Venmo you right after the show, I promise. And I do have another one to give away if somebody actually wants it. I don't know if you would. Andrew Brody, one of the best stories of the weekend, late banger to win it. Andrew Brody is 27. He signed as a homegrown with RSL when he was 25 years old. He's an RSL Arizona guy, and he's like boys with Justin Glad and, you know, some of those early dudes that came through. But he was always the guy that probably wasn't going to make it, and his career sort of shows that. He played more than 100 games with Real Monarchs. He was just trying to grind it out, trying to get there. This was his first MLS goal. Earlier in the week, he signed a contract extension through 2024 with an option for 2025. It was literally a dream moment for him. His quote afterward, it's a moment that we've all dreamed of since I joined the RSL Academy when I was 16 years old. It's a moment I didn't think was always coming, but I give a lot of credit to my parents for giving me the resilience to keep going and never give up. It's a type of story among many, I think, in Sandy right now that are getting people in seats and getting them excited, juiced. It is popping. That's 5 straight sellouts at the Riot. I think their record is 7. I expect them to get that. You got Jefferson Salvarino coming in soon. But there has been a page turned from, choose your words carefully here, Andrew, the drama and toxicity of what surrounded that club for a good bit, and they're getting back to what they were back in the glory days of like 12-13, you know, here at the Riot, battle hymn, CCL, team is the star, etc. And it looks like it's really fun to be there on that one. Marcos Hernandez hit us up from Austin and says, I asked what we should talk about. He said, not Austin, please. And so we will follow your lead, Marcos. How about Vancouver, San Jose, Doyle? Give us a quick one.
Just a wild second half, like real MLS after dark energy. A couple of goals from Jeremy Aboba. See, what was nice to see in this one, from a Quakes point of view, it was Montero, Cowell, Abobasi, and Christian Espinoza all involved in two of those goals. And the other one was Espinoza to Montero inside the six. And it's like, Chris Leitch, I think, did a good job of going out and adding pieces that fit to the pieces that were already there. And Abobasi in particular, I mean, he's got seven goals. He's playing like the type of center. He's playing full-time center forward. He's playing like the type of center forward I think a lot of us thought he could be. But yeah, the defense is still a wreck. And Lucas Cavallini, this Caps team, nothing has gone right for them this year. They look completely cursed. But Cavallini has gone out there a number of times now and just like completely emptied the tank and been miserable to play against. And he was, I think, the biggest reason why they were able to come back and get a point from this one. But these two teams still do not look like playoff teams to me.
Chicago, Cincinnati. One of those two doesn't look like a playoff team. The other one is FC Cincinnati. It's incredible, Kalen. 2-1 win on the road. Sort of a gift-wrapped win for them. But hey, they're not going to look at 3 points and complain.
No, four wins in a row for FC Cincinnati. I believe that puts them where, I think, fourth in the table right now.
That certainly has never happened for them in MLS. There's no way.
No. Yeah, I mean, so give Noonan a ton of credit. I think he's done a really good job getting this team organized and getting them in a system that gets the best out of their players. And they press at the right times and were able to create their luck in a way against Chicago. And Chicago has fallen into, I think, sort of a crisis of confidence in a way, where we're seeing them making some of the mistakes that we've seen in the past versions of Chicago Fire.
I got two tweets that both asked if they're cursed, Kalen. Do you think that they're cursed? Is there a curse at play here? Is there dark magic involved?
No, I do not think they're cursed. But I think this is what happens when you build a team. They had gotten really good results early on from being really defensively sound, but after a certain while where teams figure out how you can play and how they can pressure you, honestly, if you can't get a real release, that's where we've seen Chicago run into some things. And and then as I mentioned, the crisis of confidence, I think Salonina, can do better on the second one. The defense just giving up some opportunities there. But credit, I think the story really for me, one thing for Chicago I'd say is like, they have a couple of pieces coming in. I think Mueller looked good in spurts as someone who can actually like be a bit of a release and beat a guy one-on-one or like create an opportunity for himself. So that's a positive. But I think the story really is more about Cincinnati right now and like the way that they're able to be able to put stack wins on tops of wins. It seems legit. It doesn't seem like it's something that's going to be fool's gold and then turn around the next week and it's four losses on the bounce or anything like that, like we've seen in the past. When they've had good moments, it seems more sustainable from what I can see.
Let's talk Colorado LAFC, Dave. This one's for you. Robin Fraser said he is, quote, so effing proud of this team. He wasn't too happy about the Open Cup delay and then the return home. But a 2-0 win against LAFC. Two PKs in this one. We can listen to our analysis of that on Instant Replay presented by Cheez-It on YouTube or the truncated version at MLSsoccer.com. What'd you make of this game, this win for the Rapids?
Yeah, it was an awesome performance for the Rapids to show that they are one of the top teams in the Western Conference again. Remember, they got smoked by this LAFC team to open this year. They lose in CCL. They lost that Open Cup game as well. So you kind of have the full experience. You have less than 48 hours to travel back, and it wasn't even worth it. In the end, where you're not moving on to the next round, they rebound. I think we're seeing the best of Diego Rubio with Giassi Zardes out there and him just being able to find the game, be goal dangerous when he wants to, but find the game, create for people as well. I thought Jonathan Lewis should have made it 3 or 4-0 at some point in this game, which is the story. But with Giassi Zardes on the team, it's 3 or 4-0 and not 1-0, right? Like the result didn't hinge on what he could do. They got Wilson back as well, which is huge for this team. He is one of the best at playing out of the back and sort of managing that back line for them. So I think for the Rapids, it was it was a big performance in a big moment. National TV, no turnaround, no time to turn around. LAFC coming into your building, all those things, which was a proving point for them. And they're starting to feel, I think, like this is the team they expected to be over the course of this season.
Houston 2, Nashville 0. Houston win at home, jump over the playoff line. On goal differential, there are four teams on 15 points right around the line in the Western Conference. Houston was 10-man. Adam Lundqvist got sent off. And other good news, Koko Kariskia signed permanently or extended. I can't remember which one it is. But he's going to be around for the rest of the year either way. I can't remember off the top of my head. But I just want to read these Gary Smith
they
quotes.
Signed
whoever's
him,
highlighting
the
them in the doc. Oh, good, good. Whoever's highlighting them in the doc, please discontinue. Gary Smith, today was the first time I've seen a group of players that we put on the field who have been nowhere near the task at hand. Gary Smith, the display from an awful lot of guys was nowhere near the standards we've shown time and time again. Say it a different way. Quote, I took a chance on playing a few bodies and trying to get a bit of rotation going. There was no fluidity, belief, or confidence in the group from the very outset. That is strange to me. They only rotated four players. No, Hani was not on the field to start. He came on at half. No, Walker Zimmerman was not on the field to start. But then he came on as well. There were four rotations in this team.
I think I saw concerning someone tweet out that they've made the least amount of subs in MLS so far this year.
Second least? Second.
Okay. Yeah. Who's the least?
Yeah. So what?
I don't care. It doesn't matter.
The least is Philly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So what? It's Eric Miller at like right center back, Taylor Washington at left back, Luke Hackinson, and then Ethan Zubak got the start, and then they made rotations and still didn't look up to it. Up a man? I don't know, man. I really, really think this Nashville team has the pieces, and I think they could potentially even win the West with the glut of home games. But that's strange.
You know, when
to me,
I mentioned that story about MVP and what happens when you take a piece out of a team and what it looks like, I think this is a perfect case of that, where you take out Hani Mukhtar and you take out Walker Zimmerman and you see it doesn't even look remotely close to the same. But yeah, credit to Houston on the other side. Credit to Houston, because they took their chance as well, and they were down a man. It was a gutsy performance. Quintero for me, like, they've been able to get the best out of him, and they got up two goals. They took him out of the match, managed it well. So was definitely a big step forward. Houston needs to find some consistency, but this was big for them.
They're getting Ache Ache. I believe he's played his final game with Atletico Madrid, and that will head over to Houston. Of course, wouldn't be available until the open of the transfer window. So, yeah, that's good news for Houston above the line. This season for them, 4 wins, 4 losses, 3 draws, positive goal differential, even though it's just +1. All good, but they have played 7 home games and just 4 away. So there will be a reckoning, so to speak, when they figure that out. Inter Miami blew a lead to DC United at home. Leo Campana scored. That's good, but they had a 2-0 lead and they didn't win the game. That's bad. Taxi Fontas looks very good. He has either scored or assisted all 7 of their last goals, 5 goals, 2 assists in 336 minutes. So that is money well spent to go pick up Fontas a little bit early for DC United. And I just want to – I said on a show back when they fired Hernan Losada, I didn't know what their identity is. I think I've figured that out. They want to be a pressing team. How effective they are at that is still questionable game to game. It was pretty darn good last year. But we'll see what Chad Ashton can do the rest of the way, because he's going to be in charge, it seems, till the end of the year. And, we'll see what DC United can pull off. I think we ended here, guys. That's it. See, Doyle, we got you out on time.
Look at that.
Just barely, in an hour and a half show.
Amazing.
I know. All right. Power rankings, which you can listen to.
Yeah.
Power rankings, which you can. We did mix a ton of mail in here. Doyle says we don't get to the mailbag, but I mix it into the show now, so we make sure we get to it. 401-206-0MLSExtraTime@MLSsoccer.com. If you're mad about us not talking about your team, tweet at me at Andrew_Wiebe. Put together the guest list for power rankings every single Monday night, and I always want to pick up where we left off. You can also tweet at Dave, who 5 days a week is talking to at 11 a.m. Eastern on Twitter Spaces, as well as on the MLS Today podcast feed. Go check that one out, and go subscribe to The Call-Up as well. If you were interested in the Georgi Mihailovic MVP talk, Georgi was on the show last week. So there you go. Get an interview with him. With that, we are out of here. Enjoy your week, everybody. Adios.